Hello and welcome to Growth Coaching International's Coaching in Education podcast series. I'm your host, Richard Reid, and in today's episode, we are hearing the second part of the coaching journey at St Andrew's Cathedral School in Sydney, Australia. In part one, I was in conversation with Senior Learning Coach Ellie Smith, who shared with us the fascinating story of getting a coaching culture off the ground, starting way back in 2015. And today, in part two of this series, I'm pleased to have Ellie join me again, and this time she is joined by her colleague, Anthony Sherwin. Anthony is a learning coach at St Andrews, and through this episode, he and Ellie are going to give us some insight into the ups and downs of sustaining and growing a team of coaches. Ellie, welcome back to part two.
It's good to be back, Richard.
Anthony, great to have you join us for this second episode.
Thanks, Richard. It's great to be here.
Ellie, in our previous episode, you gave us an excellent overview of the earlier part of the coaching journey at St Andrews. And one thing that stood out for me was your positive attitude towards trying things out and not being afraid to take risks. Now, for some educators, once a new initiative is up and running, the temptation is to take the foot off the gas a little. However, that hasn't been the case at St Andrews. Can you share with us how you've managed to continue to build the numbers involved in your coaching programs?
Sure can, Richard. I think it's important to start with, you know, how did we initially build interest in the coaching space, and then look into, you know, once we had interest, then where do we go from there? So firstly, way back when we started, it was sort of a matter of myself being sort of, you know, selective about who I chose to coach. And, you know, this is something we sort of learnt in our introduction to leadership coaching course with Growth Coaching, was that, you know, find that critical friend, someone who wasn't going to judge and someone who would possibly allow me to stop mid-conversation and sort of go, oh, hang on, wait, I've got a better question. And really work on my coaching skills. And then over time, I would sort of, you know, slowly nudge them to spread the word to, you know, especially if they were heads of departments. And I would say, look, you know, can you maybe encourage some of your faculty members, you know, and sort of talking to executive and getting them to sort of spread the word as well. So early on, it's about choosing those critical friends. Most certainly don't take huge risks and go and coach the most uncoachable person in the school. You know, even if it's your neighbor in the office, like coach them first, or someone who, you know you're going to have some success with in those early days that you can kind of step off from there. Another one is, you know, obviously someone who has a bit of reach within the school. So someone else who is highly relational so that they can then spread the word that way. So that's always a good place to start. You know, some schools implement programs from the get-go and say, look, this is what we're doing. There's this many staff or, you know, this we're doing coaching for all staff. So in that instance, it's a bit different. But obviously this is this podcast we're talking about, you know, how do you do it when you start with one? And so in that instance, that's the best thing to sort of do, find your critical friends. Then, you know, you also have to look at time. One of the biggest challenges to building coaching program is time and continuing to build numbers. Like teachers are so stretched as it is. And, you know, those who try coaching realize that, hey, this is probably the best hour of my fortnight or month that I use. However, you know, getting them in. So we're quite a large school, so we couldn't just say to everybody, oh, you all get a coach for an hour a fortnight, because it's not financially possible or sustainable. So we really had to find ways to create time within our existing professional learning opportunities for teachers. And in creating time, it was about finding the urgencies or the pinch points for teachers that they might want to invest that time in coaching. So essentially we wanted to, once we sort of had a bit of a team of coaches and because we had staff wanting to do coaching, we then started to look at this sort of question, the solutions-focused approach, and how might we become part of the solution. And so we have an amazing professional development program at our school that's internal and includes international and external options as well. And so we sort of sought ways that we could build coaching programs to support the teachers in the school to meet the school's professional learning priorities, but also the external priorities of the NESA standards for New South Wales teachers. So we sort of started by running little mini programs that would look like an hour instructional workshop on data analysis or differentiation, and then we'd follow it up with sort of 2 one-to-one coaching sessions and then come back in together and reflect. So that was our very early model of trying to bring people in. So it was sort of like, look, the school said you've got to do some data analysis of your students. We'll help you with that. And part of you signing up to our little workshop is committing to 1 hour coaching sessions after that. So that was a way in the early days that we kind of got numbers going by building these mini programs. And then over time, that just became business as usual and part of our landscape. And so we were able to build programs that ran all year and support teachers to improve their expertise. You know, and these programs are obviously aligned to our strategic direction for teachers and also the NESA standards as well. So, yeah, so I think it's that start with the critical person and then build a little mini program that kind of can bring people in. It's like, you know, sense of urgency. You really need to know about this stuff because it's a requirement of the school or NESA, and we'll support you. And then we just built on those programs, and we sort of have our core programs that have been running for a few years now.
That's really helpful, Ali, because I think, as you say, yes, you know, in these two episodes, we're looking at start with one. And that's the sort of the baseline, and that's really helpful thinking about, you know, picking a critical friend, that one member of staff that you can start a coaching relationship with them, make a few mistakes, try things out, and then someone that will spread the word. That's really helpful as well, you know, because again we're trying to get a few more people to carry the flag, you know, a few more coaching champions. And if you're starting with one, obviously you need to try and spread the word a little bit. And you're right, time is an issue, and people need to hear that as well. The folks that are listening to the podcast, at time, when you look at any teacher's timetable, it's just stretched to capacity. But you're talking there about helping to meet a need with the coaching. Mm. You know, so you're selling the idea, and to have somebody turn around and say that's been the best hour of my fortnight, it's a no-brainer. You know, if you're getting that sort of feedback in the early days, which is terrific. Anthony, can I ask you to share with the listeners what inspired you to get involved in the coaching program at St Andrews?
Thanks, Richard. So when I came into the school as part of the new staff induction process, I was assigned a coach, and that was Ellie. I came into the school as quite an experienced teacher. I was not unfamiliar with things like mentoring or having, professional collaborative discussions in terms of, you know, networks and groups and things like that. I had not had any experience in coaching. I went along to that meeting thinking that it was going to be something along the lines of a sort of a mentoring or introduction to the school. Here's how we do things here. And was really blown away by some of the questions that Ellie asked me in that conversation that really, really brought about much deeper critical reflection in terms of my teaching practice and how I approach teaching, strategies that you can use in the classroom. And from there, because of that induction process, I then continued on with it into the second semester, and then when applications came up to actually engage in coaching training and be a learning coach, I threw my hat in the ring, and it's really been an extremely rewarding and meaningful step forward, I think, as an educator to engage with coaching.
I think that's interesting, the fact that it's part of an induction program, and thanks for sharing that, Anthony. You know, you arrived in not overly knowing exactly what this is, and maybe it's a little bit of mentoring or something to sort of give us a bit of an idea of what's coming up. And then I think that's really interesting and helpful for our listeners. It's the questions that Ellie asked you really made you think. And that's where we're moving right across the spectrum from mentoring right across to coaching. So the onus was on you to do the thinking, which is terrific. And I suppose created a thirst, you know, and finding out more about coaching. So that's really helpful, Anthony. Ellie, as a team involved in delivering coaching at St Andrews grew, what sort of things did you need to put in place to ensure coaching was still having a high impact?
I think something that's really important, which we've always had, is the strategic vision for coaching. And that's been essential to ensure that we keep striving for excellence and relevance as well. Coaching is a skill that's different from teaching or most styles of leadership that we sort of see in schools now. We're seeing a shift towards a, you know, coaching way of being and leading. So as the leader of coaching in the school, I couldn't just create a coaching program and hope for the best, because it was there was this skill set that was required by the people who were helping me run these programs. They couldn't just use teacher mode or leader mode and expect for it to work. So, you know, we really had to design programs that reflective of the skill level of our coaches. And over time, we've developed our own professional learning and appraisal process for our coaches. And, you know, that's been in consultation with our coaching team. It's not just been something that I've created. And a lot of the feedback from, you know, pressure points or troubles or challenges that coaches had when they first came into the role has really shaped and guided how we developed our programs and developed our professional learning for our coaches. So in some of the other, I guess, case studies from other schools, you know, you sort of hear where schools have said, yeah, we've gone and done like growth coaching international training, and then we've spent 6 to 12 months training our coaches and practicing, and then we start a program. We don't have that luxury. We just kind of have to throw them in the deep end and be like, okay, now off you go. You can start. So how do we do that? How do we make sure the integrity of coaching is upheld when those staff don't have a lot of experience? And, you know, there's some big challenges that we've thrown around the room and we've come up with some really good solutions too. So essentially anyone who wishes to express interest in the learning coach role has to have had some involvement in our coaching programs previously. So Anthony mentioned before, you know, he did 12 months of our coaching programs before he put his hat in the ring to become a coach. And the reason for that is that they know what coaching is. They understand the point of coaching. They've experienced it themselves. And we found that everybody who engages with that coaching program and then comes into the coaching role already has an understanding of what's expected of them. And that sort of helps us get a bit of a kickstart. All of our learning coaches have to do the Growth Coaching International Introduction to Leadership Coaching course, the 2-day course, before they start coaching. And that's just to make sure that there's some consistency around the conversations that are happening and the types of questions that are being asked. I think that course is, you know, it's professional. It's in 2 days, what you learn is just astounding. And really sets you up for some great quality conversations and gives you the tools that you need to go into those conversations. So that's our starting point. And then we, over time, we sort of realized, well, it's kind of hard to just dive straight into one-to-one coaching. So we actually adjusted our new staff coaching program, and it sort of reflected both the needs of our coaches but also the needs of our new staff. And so it used to just be a new staff coach program and you get a coach and you start coaching straight away. And now we've changed it to a coach mentor program because we went back at the and looked at, you know, the literature around coaching and what do we need to have, you know, an effective environment. And really it's that relational aspect. So it just kind of gave especially new coaches at the start of the year, the ability to build a relationship and a rapport and that comfort zone with staff in that mentor space. And then after sort of 5 weeks of meeting with them, they felt more comfortable to say, okay, let's switch over into coaching mode. And so, yeah, so we sort of adjusted our program so that any new coach, they start with our new staff so that they can kind of get their training wheels off in the mentor stage and then slowly drip feed some coaching questions in. So that's how we sort of dealt with, oh, we've got a new coach at the start of the year and we have to give them some coaching load. And then ongoing, you know, we've got coaches like Anthony and a couple of other our coaches who've been with us for 2 or 3 years. So that's been something that's been a good challenge for me as the leader to work out, well, how can we continually build our coaches, me included. And so we have fortnightly meetings as a team that focus around idea building, solution seeking, identifying challenges and professional development. for our coaching skills, including reflective practice and coaching rounds. So that's been, I think, a really big game changer for us. They're not administrative meetings. It's all about the development of our skills and solving problems and thinking strategically. And then something else that we have added is we have a whole school appraisal process for teachers and leaders, and we included learning coaches within that process. And so it wasn't about, you know, ticks and crosses of are you doing your role properly. It was about giving coaches an opportunity to set professional goals for their coaching practice and for an area to explore coaching in. So, you know, within observational practice or team coaching. And that gave us a starting point to feed into coaching supervision and reflection for our coaches throughout the year. So we sort of, you know, over time have built these things, but we're at a really good space now where we've got this sort of our team meetings, our individual goals, and our professional learning opportunities throughout the year for our coaches. So it doesn't matter how much where their experience level is at. There's something that's always going to, you know, I guess entice them and keep them to on that track of developing professionally as a coach. Because often I think we forget that, and we just, you know, we develop as teachers, but it's like, well, we actually need to be better as coaches as well.
Yeah. Fantastic, Ali. It's interesting to look back over now what is effectively a 7-year period. And what's really useful for our listeners is if they're starting with one right now, you're starting with one. You're finding a critical friend, you're building it up slowly. And something that a couple of things I've noticed that you said there, you know, you're designing and implementing programs that reflect the skill level of our coaches at any one time. So that's going to be simple, straightforward at the beginning, and then start to develop and become a little bit more complex, as has been the case at St Andrews. And again, I like that idea of, you know, apply to be a learning coach once you have been coached for some time yourself, like Anthony said at the start of the episode. And again, I've written down here continually adjusting. So there's that awareness as a school that you need to constantly look at, what are we doing? Can we refine it? Can we change it, given the people that we're working with? And that's a lovely idea, transitioning from mentoring for a number of weeks, moving into the coaching arena, adding in some coaching questions, you know, at a sensible pace. It's just really well managed, but there's a nice pace to the change all the way through. And folks that are listening, you're not going to be starting at where you guys are now. This is 7 years in, so being able to pace yourselves, this is really, really helpful. Anthony, working as part of a team of coaches, essentially at St Andrews, must be a great encouragement for you. When we think of the title of this double episode, Start With One, what do you see as the main benefits of having a team of learning coaches around you, as well as Ellie in her role as senior learning coach?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think if you think about the example of a teacher in a classroom, you go into that classroom and you're the teacher, generally most of the time in there by yourself with your students, just one teacher. And so part of the wonderful thing about coaching is you have the opportunity to sit down with another educator and walk through and look at what are the challenges that you face, what are the possible solutions or strategies that you could use in order to meet a goal. And I think it's no different for coaches. So when you go out and start doing your coaching and you have your coachees, and especially right at the start when you first start doing it, there is even for experienced educational practitioners, it's a little bit nerve-wracking. Am I doing it correctly? What kind of questions should I ask now? Am I giving the coachee all the opportunities they need? So there was a little bit of nerves to that when I first started coaching. What was really beneficial about having a coaching team and having those regular team meetings was to be able to share your experiences and what you feel is working and be able to celebrate that, but also to discuss some of the challenges. And then that solutions-focused point that Ellie mentioned, that, you know, in that team conversation, you've got colleagues there that are going through the same things or have come up with some strategies or solutions for you. Mm-hmm. and also with a very experienced coach like Ellie leading the way as well and offering suggestions, solutions and strategies. So I think in that sense, it's really, really important to have that team to yeah. build towards a team of people that you can bounce off. And then also, interestingly, to see each other kind of develop over time. So as Ellie mentioned, there's a few of us now that have been coaching for 2 or 3 years yeah. And we're there as team members to support new coaches coming in. And it's really, I think, a helpful environment to have where you have the leadership of the senior learning coach, but then also some other coaches who are a little bit experienced, who went through the same things as you and can give you some advice. And also the coaching rounds, I think, is a really important part of the team meetings where, you know, you can actually run through scenarios and actually, you know, model some coaching to each other and with each other, and even, you know, discuss types of questions that you think are working really, really well, and at what point that you might like to implement those questions within a conversation is really, really helpful and beneficial. I think the other thing for me, particularly individually as a coach, with some of the things that Ellie's talked about in terms of reflecting on the programs, it's been wonderful as a team and an individual within a team to be able to be a part of the forward planning process and to offer solutions and strategies myself to some of the issues that have come up in our programs. And that also within the appraisal process as a team also, but as individuals, it's really been helpful to work informally with the senior learning coach in terms of, especially in those early days where you maybe do want to check in one-to-one every fortnight as you build your confidence, but then being flexible and, you know, adjusting as needed, getting to the point now after, you know, 3 years of coaching and discussing with Ellie that, yeah, we probably don't need to meet one-to-one fortnightly. Maybe that's once a month or as needed. Yeah. But obviously meeting as a team, that happens fortnightly as well. And having specific goals around your coaching. So early on, particularly, just to give you one example, because I was so excited to do coaching and have these conversations with colleagues, I needed to get out of the way a little bit while I was coaching. I was really sort of participating a little bit too much in a conversation rather than being an active listener. And so through that appraisal process with Ellie, that was something that we decided we needed to work on and really was very, very beneficial as a starting coach to work on that, to improve my coaching and sort of, I guess, eventually to realize through that appraisal process and discussing it with my supervisor, which was Ellie, that a coaching conversation in a way is not even really a conversation. It's, you know, one person who's the coach really facilitating the other person's ideas and thoughts. Yeah. And so through that appraisal process and those discussions with Ellie, I really became a much better listener in a coaching conversation.
Fantastic, Anthony. I love your phrase at the start when you mentioned to have someone to walk through the challenges with. I think that's really, really important, that idea of working, you know, with a team of coaches. And it's nerve-wracking at the start. It's only human to be anxious when you take on something new like this. But again, as part of a team, being able to celebrate the wins with other people, but also share the challenges is important. And I like the idea where you make the comment, you know, you're getting to see other fellow coaches develop as well. Which is a nice part of the process. And again, there, as things move forward, you also have a voice on the team as to how things develop. Anthony, if I can stay with you for this next question, from your perspective as a current learning coach, how do you see your role developing in the coming years?
One thing that's been really exciting this year was that Ellie has begun the accreditation process for all of our coaches, but particularly the coaches that have a little bit of more experience now after two or 3 years. So that's been a really exciting opportunity to go through that accreditation process. I'm really looking forward to continuing the role, working with other coaches and making myself available to work with new coaches coming in as they do the training and as they go through that first stages of learning how to conduct really rich and productive coaching conversations. Mm. But one other thing, and I've discussed this quite a bit with Ellie, and I'll mention to you, Richard, I've noticed a lot in the last few years how coaching and being a part of these conversations has actually really fundamentally changed the way that I approach my teaching and conversations with students or even colleagues in a staff room. But particularly what I'm excited about is coaching conversations with students in the classroom, using the skills that I've picked up to help educators unpack their ideas and work on goals and strategies and moving that into a classroom space with students, having coaching conversations with students around feedback goals, their approaches to learning, what their next steps are. And instead of perhaps in the past where I would go in with feedback and say, you know, to a student, you need to do X, Y, and Z, let me know when you've done that. going through a coaching conversation or approach with a student would be facilitating and allowing that student to come to that realization themselves, which is a much more powerful way, I think, of students understanding feedback and then actually being able to action it with next steps. So coaching the classroom is something that I'm really excited about for the future.
Fantastic. And that's why it's great, Anthony, to have you on this episode, because, you know, for you as a learning coach at the moment, there's a real sense that the school is wanting to constantly raise the bar as far as the standards in coaching goes. And that comes through clearly from what Ellie's saying, but from you as well, Anthony, as a serving learning coach at the moment. And there's a genuine thirst and hunger to up your game, which comes through really clearly, which is just terrific. And that idea of opportunity for, you know, getting excited about the accreditation process, which is just terrific. And the sentence there that you've used, Anthony, which is really interesting, that coaching has fundamentally changed your conversations with colleagues, but also with students. So there's a perfect example of the powerful impact that being part of that coaching team has had on you, I suppose, as a professional in many ways. So thank you very much for sharing that. Ellie, as you look ahead to 2023 and beyond, what are your hopes and aspirations for the coaching culture as a whole at St Andrews?
Ultimately, we want to improve the conversations that we're having around improving student outcomes and their learning. And that's sort of why we've got coaching at the school in the first place. So next year, in 2023, I think something that's really exciting is that the Deputy Head of School Teacher Quality and the Director of Teaching and myself will look at more ways to integrate coaching across the whole school professional learning program. So at the moment, you know, obviously it's opt-in and we offer it as sort of a side package to our whole school professional learning. And so we're really looking forward to finding more ways to integrate that coaching approach to some of our professional learning opportunities. We already sort of have some coaching underpinned in our appraisal process through our feedback conversations, and it would be really good to be able to consider how else might we integrate coaching aspects across the whole school program. On a personal level, a program that we had running before remote learning was networking, which was essentially the concept of coaching outdoors. And, you know, it was a great opportunity to bring staff together to sort of go for a walk around our urban jungle of Sydney City. And essentially networking is just based around you have a common theme and, you know, we'd sort of spend have four questions for each theme and you sort of walk for 15 minutes having a chat of, you know, reflective conversations. And then sort of, you know, after each 15 minutes of conversation, you sort of bring the group together, have a bit of a chat and go forward. So I think we'd really like to bring that back. It's been something that's disappeared with lockdowns and restrictions and all those sorts of things. So we'd like to start fresh in 2023, bring that one back into our program. And something that we've sort of been working on in the past semester is doing a bit of an environmental scan with our heads of department. So I really like to see us use some of that data that we've collected from that scheme to drive coaching in our middle leader space, to be able to get them using, you know, some of our data that we have for students and for staff professional learning goals to drive improvements in teacher expertise. So that's sort of, you know, I don't know what it's going to look like because this is how it works when we start with one. but, you know, that's sort of next year's project, to use the data that we've got from our scan to think about what could be possible and go from there.
Fantastic. Ellie and Anthony, can I say a big thanks to you both for very generously giving of your time to help us put these two episodes together. One key message that has come through many of our stories from the field has been patience and showing grit and determination from the early days of establishing a coaching culture. Looking back over the last 7 years, you have achieved a great deal right from the very start, Ellie, where you started with one, to now having a whole team of coaches, and we wish you all continued success as you grow and develop. For our listeners, I'm sure this story has inspired and encouraged you. And if you're keen to get access to more episodes of our podcast, or indeed many other articles, video clips, course information, then check out the GCI website. In the meantime, I look forward to joining you all on the next episode of Coaching in Education, where theory and good intentions meet reality.